Welcome back to the Shout Louder podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Williams, and today I'm going to be talking to Leslie Ann O'Brien. You may know her from Lockjaw Records, where she's one of the managers, or you might know her as the guitarist in Midwich Cuckoos. She's involved in all different facets of the music industry, and she's one of the most positive, upbeat, inclusive, active people that I know within the scene. To be honest, I'm surprised it's taken me this long to get her onto the show, but we've been so keen to talk to each other on the podcast for a while. We had a great conversation that I hope you enjoyed just as much as we did. We talked a lot about the current nature of the punk rock scene in the UK, particularly how to make it more inclusive, how to help bands with their social media presence and trying to get their music out there, how Lockjaw have changed their kind of release method in light of the pandemic, what you can do when there aren't live shows to go to. We talked a lot about Black Lives Matter as well, and about racism, and about trying to maybe improve the outlook in the music scene. We also talked about beer, music, Lockjaw Records releases, all kinds of things. There's a huge amount of stuff we managed to cover in this conversation. We've also got tracks from Borts, from Prey Drive, and from Midwich Cuckoos to listen to. I'll dive straight in for you. This is my conversation with Leslie Ann O'Brien from September 2020. Leslie, welcome to the Shout Louder podcast.
Hey.
We've finally managed to get a perfect time for us to get together and do this.
I like that we've been able to persevere and make this happen. This is really cool.
We've done well. I'm so glad that we're able to do this as well. It's weird for me doing it over Zoom rather than in person. Have you been doing lots of Zoom stuff recently?
I have been doing nonstop Zoom. Zoom is my life now. But it's, I know what you mean. It's like a bit weird. I'm looking at you, but not looking at you. And we're having a chat with microphones as well, which is interesting.
I found it interesting with, like right at the beginning of lockdown, everyone suddenly discovered what Zoom was, right? And we'd been using it way before that for like business meetings and things like that, you know? And then everyone else sort of seemed to realize that it existed.
Well, I've not tried the other services yet, so I can't really comment. But I've enjoyed like, you know, the Zoom quizzes everybody's been doing and like the catch-ups and just general stuff that's been quite cool. But I think life in 3D is better.
Always. I think, though, the best Zooms that I've had so far have been ones where people weren't really talking, like where you get 30 people in a room and someone is DJing off their laptop and everyone's kind of sat on their sofas staring at their phones or like have a little rave by themselves on the screen. Have you been to any of them?
No, I've clearly been going to the wrong Zooms.
There was one after Manchester Punk Festival's live stream thing and no one was talking to each other. Or like there are a few people shouting over each other, but you can't hear it over the music. There was one we went to that was all, it was Club Tropicana themed. And they just played Club Tropicana again and again and again and again. That I'm for, yeah. But yeah, how's lockdown been treating you? So you've got a huge amount of different interests and you're always involved in so many different little projects and things. The thing you're probably best known for is Lockjaw Records, but you've got the band Midwich Cuckoos as well. And you're managing people on the side, you're helping people out with PR, and you've got your actual day job as well. How have you been finding managing all of that at the moment?
Eventful. It's, yeah. Man, I love what I do. I can't complain. I'm really happy and lucky to do what I do. So, I think the whole Lockjaw side of stuff has been incredible this year, you know, is seeing COVID hit and seeing like music venues slow down and you're just thinking, right, how's this going to turn out? How are things going to go with our releases? And if anything, people have wanted to hear music and have wanted to support bands. So it's just like, you know, it's been super fantastic, I think, on that sort of regards. I also play in a band.
That's really good.
Yeah. I mean, just, I think everybody's sort of making the best out of a bad situation. Like the people around me, yeah. The scene, do you know what I mean? That's just been so heartwarming. All the feels. I also manage other bands. I'm in a band as well called Midwich Cuckoos. That's been fun. We were supposed to go into like the studio with Tim Kramer from Drones. When lockdown happened and yeah, oops. But we're getting in there. We're actually getting back in there this week. So I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah, okay.
And instead we've just been able to like have fun and do like acoustic renditions of our tracks and stuff like that. Yeah.
That's really good. So you're actually getting in the studio in person with Tim this week?
Yeah.
That's going to be really exciting. Have you got quite a few tracks lined up or are you going to see how it goes when you're there?
Well, I wouldn't like to divulge too much, but yeah, we've got like our tracks that we've been working on for about a year now. And it'd be really cool. We've done demos and stuff and just want to see what it sounds like with the studio treatment. So I'm really
that would be so good.
That.
And I think Tim's the perfect fit for you guys as well. I think that would be a really, really good pairing.
Yeah, I can't wait to work with him. He's sick.
Yeah. So what else have you been up to? So as I say, work itself is presumably keeping you really busy as well, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, in between work things, I do like music things, family things. I think with all the stuff that doesn't really fit into the punk genre, because I also deal with like metal bands as well. And recently, May, we released an album for the Bloody Mallard. Which is
so good as well. I really love that. Yeah.
My friend Tom, I've been working with him for years. And, he kind of mentioned that he was like recording tracks. And he just came back with these demos that were just so intricate. And just like, wow, man, that song's been in your head. And then he took it to the studio. And then it was just... it was fantastic. It's sort of a revelation of like sort of songwriting and like, you know, how you could build it up in the studio. And he brought in he found these great session musicians and brought them in, and they added like a bit of flavor to it. And just sort of seeing that journey of the album, and the album is a journey in itself. It's a sort of prog rock, stoner rock, bit of doom thrown in there as well. Cool. So if you like your Caius, your Mastodon, your Queens of Stone Age, it's instrumental as well. But
I love that though. I think people are a little bit against instrumental, but I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that. I love it like that, you know? Make up your own lyrics if you're bothered.
Precisely, but I can't imagine there being lyrics on this album, because like it would just take you away from that riff and drum journey that you're on when you're listening to it.
That's it. It's got a really big emotional hit to it as well. Mm. And I think that sometimes, you know, music can convey so many emotions, but then you add words on top of it. And in a way, that almost limits it, because you're limiting yourself to the lyricist's experience rather than just getting seriously into some guitars. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. And I think with, the way that he sort of structured his songs and everything, like you could go for a walk or drive and get a totally different vibe to the album than listening to it in the bathtub or something, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's great. But yeah, that's a huge amount that you've been up to.
It's been fun. I can't complain. Really, it's been amazing. And I like to keep busy.
Yeah, definitely. You're one of the busiest people I know.
Really?
Yeah, you're always busy, but in a good way. It's because you're so enthusiastic and ready to get... like dive into a new project and like take a really good idea and then actually make something of it, rather than just going, oh, that was great, let's forget about that.
Well, I think I'm just happy to be around some awesome people who are doing really cool things, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. But that's how you feed off of each other, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And I I've always in, you know, how you've had the different scenes in London since I like sort of moved back to this country, and I've never found a scene like the punk scene that's happening at the moment. It's just been amazing since like sort of day one, sort of people recommending bands, recommending other people to chat to. It's such a beautiful little network. It's also worldwide.
Yeah, definitely. It's really enthusiastic and encouraging. Like, you know, people want to see other people in the scene do well, I think. And I think, I'm sure you and I said to each other a couple of years ago in person that just like you could almost feel like this bubbling undercurrent in the scene, mm-hmm. like particularly the international scene at the moment, like things are getting bigger and better. And by that, I don't mean that we're suddenly going to start making loads of money or selling out arenas, but just that people have got energy for it again and they're interested.
No, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of blood, sweat and tears, and there's a lot of heart about that that goes into that as well. And everybody recognizes that, and everybody's just trying to push the best out of each other and like, you know, show off their friends and be super proud of each other. It's amazing, you know, and I don't want to be like down of like any past scenes or like metal scenes. But I think everything's like a bit more insular. But what I am seeing is that there is a bit more of sort of cooperation between bands and everybody like building each other up in these different scenes now. Whereas before, everybody just kind of sort of stand there po-faced, arms folded, you know?
People, like, a lot of the people you see at the front going nuts are the people in the other bands that are playing that night now.
Yeah.
Like, people are encouraging each other rather than, there's nothing competitive about it. And I think that's a risk sometimes that, like, particularly with DIY, people can get a bit sore. Like, if one band's booked on this festival and their band isn't booked on that festival. But then occasionally you see stuff like that. You see a bit of jealousy in competition. And the people who are, the people who fall into that bracket tend to be kind of pushed out a little bit, I think, which might not be the nicest thing, but I kind of feel like that's organically happened. Mm. Like, the people who were difficult have kind of gradually edged themselves away from stuff. I don't know. It's a bit of a strange way of putting it, but
no, I totally agree. I mean, like, you're not going to want to work with people who are pain in the butt, and everybody's busy.
Yeah,
and everybody's
true.
Got stuff going on, and you know, like, the bestest people, I think, and the bestest bands will rise to the top. It really does.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And a bit of healthy competition ain't too bad.
Oh, no, it's not so bad. I think that's a good one in skate punk. I constantly like to change over who my favourite skate punk band is in the UK. You know, it's always either like Darko or Fair Dues.
Do you have like a little grading system for this?
Yeah, and I like to bump them up and down based on how much they've individually pissed me off. You know, or something to that effect, at least. But yeah, so you've been juggling all of that. Have you found, I mean, I'm finding that life is going a little bit slower in the coronavirus era. Are you finding things slower, or are you finding it more than it was?
I think the work is different in terms of releases and sort of pre-planning things and the things that you need to be paying attention to. I think that's changed, whereas you kind of had gigs to also rely on to help you kind of put the word out there, you know, word of mouth. But now people aren't really talking with each other face to face. It's through Zoom.
No, that's so true. And I think, you know, normally if you're doing a release schedule, you're going to work that around a tour or at least like a release party. And so many people buy stuff like physical, like records and stuff at shows. What do you think is important for a band now then? Like, if they can't tour, how are you guys going about, you know, releasing records? How are you changing things to adapt to that?
Content, content, content. You know,
content.
You know, it's like really whether you decide to give an insight to what's happening in your little world or not. I think you just really have to have a presence and really connect with people so that they want to follow you, that you can cut through all those algorithms, you know, and connect with people. Really, and that's a combination of all your social media platforms. Don't just focus on one, but
yeah, of course. I mean, I think people do focus a little bit too much on Facebook, bands that is. And I think that YouTube is really an area that people ought to be looking more into and keeping Instagram afloat as well. I think Instagram is definitely, I don't know, certainly in my circle, it's more popular now than Facebook was.
Oh, definitely. And I think it's like, I think people are lazy and they don't like to scroll. So like Instagram stories just go off and like, who the heck wants to scroll down their feed?
I was talking to someone about this recently. I feel like Instagram's completely changed. I used to scroll down the feed and now I'm just like, oh, well, no, I'll let the feed come to me. Like, I remember before it had stories on there at all. And now I probably only really watch stories.
Well, if you can figure out reels before I do, that let me know, because
I haven't. I saw it come up and I thought, right, clearly this is going to be the next thing. And we're going to have to stop playing with that. They seem to have nicked it from TikTok.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Yes, they've totally done that.
Maybe that should be our next goal then. We can figure out how to use reels. I'll do a reel off with you.
I might just have to like grab a 14-year-old to help me with this though.
I'm too old for this shit, I swear. I really want to give it a go. But also with the way that like the algorithms work in the background, like Instagram tends to boost up posts in the feed from users who use all the different types of service that Instagram have. So like if you're using all the different story features like the buttons and the countdowns and the tags, then overall your account is seen higher. So I'm figuring if you start using Reels, you're going to zoom straight to the top of people's feeds.
Oh, heck yeah. No, absolutely. And post once a day. Try not to do more, try not to do less, but post once a day. That's a...
I can never post once a day. How do people manage that? I mean, they schedule it, don't they?
You schedule it. It's painful. You just got to do it. And this is what I mean by content, content, content. It is hard, people, but if you find a way, you can make the magic happen. And I mean, you know, if you like a band and they're doing something cool and you're seeing something, you know, every couple of days, because you're not going to see it every day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you feel like you're part of the journey.
Yeah, you're part of that group. Mm. I think it's easy enough to think all these things, but putting them into execution is like a whole different game. Do you think that bands are ready for that kind of thing? Or are they maybe a little bit more traditional in general?
I think you need to have a mix. I think bands need to be ready. It's the, this is the new thing, right? You can't,
yeah.
We can't dial back time. However, you know, you can't take back those core fundamentals that made bands work 5, 10, 15 years ago. Do you know what I mean? It's just on a different platform. So yeah, you might have to be more organized in terms of like your approach to connecting with your fans.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think a good approach for bands in general, obviously it doesn't work for everybody, but I think that it's good if everyone in the band has different responsibilities. And I love the idea now that as well as having like a guy who does the bookings and a guy who looks after the merch, like most bands will have one member of the band who's like the little social media manager.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you tend to get to know which member of the band you're interacting with as well, I think.
You've also got your responsible dads.
And oh, that's very
drunk
important.
Uncles,
the guy who gets you to get in the van.
Oh, totally, yeah. But yeah, it seems like every band's got a little social media marketing.
Yeah, they've got a little dude who does those things. Yeah,
like that's been scheduled. Oh, cool.
We got this.
Bands are adapting, and I think you know if you can link things which happen, you know, which worked 10 years ago, up into a modern context, and we've got to remember that. There's a lot of kids who aren't on Facebook, who aren't on Instagram. Like, they're just on TikTok, and some of them aren't even looking at social media at all, like, to get
Absolutely.
Their music. And it
yeah.
is solely word of mouth or internet radio. Obviously, I think this is sort of less prevalent in, you know, the punk genre. But
I think the punk genre has a slightly older... I mean, I say that. I think that... The part of the type of punk that I'm into is a slightly older market. You know, you're looking at kind of 28 to 42. I don't know where I've picked that age range from. I've just picked it. And then I think there are people who are into that kind of music who are younger, but it's almost like a different scene. It's a bit disconnected from what we look at, I guess.
I think so. That's like looking at like online stats and also who shows up at gigs as well.
Massively, yeah.
And I mean, there should be no reason that there shouldn't be any crossover. Do you know what I mean?
Oh God, yeah.
And I look forward to the day where I'm seeing more fresh faces at gigs. And I think that's just one thing the scene needs to kind of crack to kind of get that crossover, not just in terms of the age barrier as well as genre barrier as well. I think we should
absolutely.
Be
I mean, I
a
think.
Lot more.
Well, that's it. Punk, you know, isn't necessarily a musical genre so much as an ethos anymore. Mm. I think that one of the ways I can see it starting to happen, and like living in Manchester, I go to quite a few different gigs from different genres, and I've noticed there's kind of like a fuzzy garage punk thing going on that's kind of halfway in over on the indie side and halfway over on the punk side. That seems to be happening, and that seems to be getting in a much younger crowd as well. But it's just getting that crossover between the two, getting them to all come to the same place in the same venue at the same time. And then that's all been halted at the moment anyway, because you can only fit 30 people at a gig and they all need to stand 2 meters away from each other. So,
I mean, it's like, yeah, come on, listen to some loud guitars. And equally for like all the metal kids, it's like, you know, come on, hey, venture over and check this out. I think it's doable. And I would love to see like more diverse lineups on bills. And I think that's the one way that's going to happen is at gigs.
Definitely. I think it's much harder to get people to listen to fresh stuff online. So how do we go about getting different people down to gigs though? Like how do we approach that? Just better promotion?
I have no idea. This is like the golden question, isn't it?
I know. No one knows the answer. But we can all have like a little bit of a guess here. I do think actually better promotion would make a big difference.
I think promoters...
And promoting in different platforms and places. Free gigs as well.
At Lockjaw, we're working on something that's sort of cross-genre, which should be interesting.
Cool.
And I hope that like that kind of familiarity between the bands might cause like one band to say, hey, let's do a gig swap. Because we can't just say, oh, it's, you know, something that promoters have to do. Like, bands can do it as well. Like, hey, I know this is a sick band. They play, like, really fast grime that's edgy. Like, get them on the bill. Do you know what I mean? If people vibe with it.
Oh man, I would love to see that. Like, I'd love to go to a gig where it's like punk and grime and stuff like that at the same time. That would be so cool.
I think that would be amazing. Like, I'm love like Do It Together Fest.
Oh yeah,
that was a nice you know, sort of mix of like sort of different punk. You got ska punk in there. That was absolutely fab.
We were trying to throw in a lot of different genres all at once, but then I think partly that was because there was, you know, I was one of three promoters for that event. And we all had really different taste. I tell you what, though, that was one thing I've never done before. For the lineup for Do It Together Fest, we had a voting system between the three promoters where I made a color-coded spreadsheet, right? And I had my band's suggestions.
This is
and
so
Paul
nerdy.
And Colin had their... It's such a me thing to do. And then we voted on them with like a green, orange or red response, which was like, hell yeah, I'm keen on that. Or nah, not into that. And then the amber one was like, meh, you know, I won't mind if I see him, but I'm not fussed. And then we voted on that level. So all the bands who got three fuck yeahs got booked. And then the other bands that got booked all had two fuck yeahs and a meh. Like no one who got a hell no got booked on that. But I think that was a really good way to do it because it prevented us from arguing about which bands to get on, even though we had quite different tastes. And it meant that every band that we had on the lineup was strong because we'd had at least two of us go, oh, yeah, I fucking love that band. They're amazing. Oh, my God. Ah, it was very excitable and very, it was a very geekily booked festival.
Did you have a
I'm
pivot
really glad
table
we did
on?
That now.
Yeah, it was great. And I think, like, just the reaction on everybody's faces, like, getting progressively drunker, progressively happier throughout the whole affair it was such a good time. That's like one of the big gigs, wasn't it?
We made a couple of hundred quid on a tombola.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
That's a good tombola.
I did a tombola where I also, in my tombola, I had quite a lot of stuff that I've just been wanting to get rid of, like punk stuff, merch, and that. And I got rid of it through the tombola. We made over 800 quid for charity, which was pretty cool. That was one of probably the biggest gig that I went to before the lockdown, because that was at the end of January. And after that, I had maybe one or two shows. But apart from that, that was the last thing that I had. And I'm so glad that we did it in January because we got a big group of people together, loads of friends. And if I hadn't have done that, I wouldn't have caught up with quite a lot of my mates we wouldn't have caught up all this year, possibly, you know?
I think that was the last kind of all-dayer that I went to. I think I played a gig after that, but, you know, I haven't done anything serious. So I'm so glad that happened. You know, it's just amazing how this year's kind of turned out. And there's like, in a way, there's not much to look forward to in terms of like gigs or like little benchmarks in the year.
In some ways, but also the one or two things that do pop up now, we're going to be so much more excited to go to.
Oh, definitely. And also, I think like looking backwards, like at those last gigs and stuff, I'm like, oh, do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, that was great fun, wasn't it?
Or else it would just be lost into the, you know, lost to time.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I tell you what, shall we play a track? What have you been listening to recently?
Ooh, well, there's a really cool band on the scene. A number of podcasts have like sort of picked up on them. They're called Borts.
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 I feel like I can't say that word in my own accent. Borts.
Borts.
Borts?
Borts.
Borts. Borts.
No, it's a weird one.
It sounds like someone's misspelled Bart Simpson.
I think that's might be what it is. Yeah,
possibly.
I
don't know. I bet they'll have loads of interviewers ask them, like, "Oh, where's your name come from?" That's like your first interview question. It's a really boring interview question.
you've got a lockdown. You know what that first question is when you speak to them. But man, they like just hearing them. It's a perfect balance of sort of nostalgia and something modern that made the over 30-year-old in me excited and the 16-year-old me terribly excited at the same time. It was just like, yes, all systems
that
go.
That is fantastic. Brilliant. Which track do you fancy? Broke Alone.
Friends.
That was Bought with Broke Alone. Great little tune there. Like, I'm really looking forward to hearing some more from them. That'll be exciting.
Yeah, I think they're cracking. Can't wait to hear more either.
So we talked a bit about coronavirus and how that's had an impact on you. And I think it's had a different impact on everyone. So it's really hard to kind of manage. Personally, I didn't find it too difficult. I'm all right with having to sit at home alone on my own. But the uncertainty of it was obviously a big problem. And I think from what I've heard, a lot of my friends who don't experience anxiety were starting to get a bit of that, you know, like that we don't know what's going to be happening in 6 months. We don't know what's going to be happening this week. You know, when we were in lockdown, we didn't know when we were going to be let out. In fact, before the lockdown, we didn't know when we were going to be locked down. There's been a lot of, I don't know. One of the things I found difficult during the lockdown was also obviously the really unfortunate passing of George Floyd and everything that followed that with the Black Lives Matter protests, the absolute deluge of content online. And I really like the fact that the music industry took a bit of a deliberate pause, but was that something that you found stressful as well?
I try to really focus on the positives about it. I think it was really a horrible thing to kind of watch that video. And then I think for like a couple of days, it sort of went quiet. And then all of a sudden, I felt like it just kind of hit worldwide. You know, and I had received a number of emails from music industry bodies saying, hey, we're thinking about doing this. And we participated in Black Friday and sort of mentioned it to all the bands that we work with.
Social media blackout sort of.
And I felt that was such a positive reaction for just such a horrible negative thing. And, you know, George Floyd was just the one that everybody saw, the incident that everybody saw. There have been so many videos like that and similar things in the past that it's just, you know, there's just a bit of numbness to it to actually see something come out of it in the conversation. Yes, a bit stressful because there's so much uncertainty with COVID. And then, you know, everybody's having this kind of massive conversation online, which I don't think is a great place to hold a discourse.
No, not necessarily. The internet's not always the best place for it, is there?
But, you know, amazing positive things were happening in this space. And, you know, this is why I love the internet and, you know, sort of people connecting with each other that, you know, they can do these amazing, beautiful things, you know?
Well, I mean, I think it's so unfortunate the way that it came about. But I also think it was a unique set of circumstances. We've got, you know, social media now, we've got everyone's carrying camera phones. So all this video footage was unearthed. And obviously that specific video, George Floyd, you know, went right across the globe. There were so many people who saw it. But also I think that people had more time to focus on what was happening there because of COVID and because everything's kind of in a shutdown. And because, you know, people I think have got a bit more time at the moment to focus on that. It was so unfortunate that it happened, but I think that the circumstances of when and where and how has, well, for lack of a better way of describing it, helped it reach a much wider audience than it might have done otherwise. And I think it's given people the opportunity to take a look at what they're doing, whether that's, you know, within their own lives, within their own workplace, or for us within like our own music scene. It's given everyone a chance to reflect on that and think, okay, well, there's clearly still a problem. What are we going to do to fix it?
No, absolutely. And instead of it being an American thing or, you know, that's happening over here, it's like a truly worldwide, it had a worldwide focus and people were looking what they could do from all around the world, you know, sort of seeing Black Lives Matter marches all across the globe where you wouldn't necessarily think that there were any issues or, I mean, everywhere's got issues, but just that support was there.
Yeah.
Is sort of really amazing. And also I think that like the next step of it is the organizing that sort of goes alongside that movement as well. You know, for everybody on an individual level, looking at seeing what they can do, and on a community level, seeing what they can do with their own communities has been fantastic.
Massively. And I think that's still rolling as well. You know, things are, you know, there might be a little bit less of it online at the moment, but I think that things are still really moving along quite quickly. Did you go to the protests in London?
Yeah, that was amazing, really.
Yeah.
gone to a few. I've gone to a local one as well. And I think that's where the next sort of action is going to happen, because you go to the Black Lives Matters protest in London and everybody's all talking about what they're doing in their local community. It's about having a forum there, talking, sharing ideas, using that platform, showing strength in numbers. And I think visibility is very key. It's great to like talk about stuff and do stuff with your friends and talk about it online, but I think visibility is really the key part there, and it's just super powerful. And just sort of seeing everybody from all walks of life, you know, from babies to elderly people, all sorts of people, is just phenomenal.
I think you're so right.
And sort of inspiring that people have sort of taken it to their local councils to fix issues there, local schools with issues, and, you know, everybody reporting back and getting organized. You know, this is probably like the largest sort of civil rights movement, not just for like the United States, but like sort of worldwide, in sort of changing things. And, you know, there is a conversation about like what we can do in the UK, which is fab. And I think that things might progress. I mean, it's a slow one, but I don't see it really, you know, drifting away anytime soon.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's also led to a few uncomfortable conversations within our specific music scene. I mean, from my perspective, I think that the punk scene has a tendency to view itself as this amazing, inclusive space where, you know, everybody's safe, like all races and genders and, you know, sexualities are welcomed and embraced. But the thing is that saying that something is a safe space doesn't make it a safe space. Mm. You know, I think that there's still, I think that maybe we think we're a little bit better than we are. And I think it definitely raised some conversations about the fact that a lot of our end of the punk scene is white, you know, and mostly dudes, straight white dudes. There's a lot of straight white dudes about. And there's been conversations about what we can maybe do to try and change that. I know you've been involved with some things along those lines. I know you're working on a bit of a project with Lockjaw.
Yeah, working on a project with Lockjaw.
Secret project.
Yeah, waiting to cross the T's and deliver that so like it can have the attention that it deserves, really. Not in a rush to get it out, just to get something out. We want to really do this properly. And I think it's a similar sort of issue as we were talking about in terms of sort of getting the younger kids in the scene. I think, you know, for me, I felt like the scene is a good place. You know, I've been in other scenes where like, you know, people have tried to beat me up in the pit at a show. And, you know, tell me that I'm not welcome and things like that. And I felt like I've been embraced by this particular punk rock scene that we've just got happening at the moment. Felt very unwelcome, or just felt like it's a bit of a, you know, white boys club, really. And I'm not invited because nobody's just going to talk to me. And, oh, wow, why is everyone staring? You know, I've never felt that. You know, if anything, people stare at you and come over and go, hey, where you come from? What's your name? You know,
yeah, absolutely.
That's amazing. So I think like we do a lot and everybody's very conscientious. But yes, the dilemma that there's not really any visibility there for people of color needs to be addressed. And I do think that is by really championing people of color who are in the scene. So it feels that other people can also come into the space if they want to. You know,
I mean, obviously, I'm a white female, so I can't really talk about racism with any authority, but I would assume it's a little similar to the way that women have been treated in the scene in some ways, in that to begin with, it wasn't really seen as, well, it's still to some extent not seen as normal for women to be seen on stage, you know, and to be in bands. And I think it was just really noticeable when you'd have a band with a woman in for a bit. So I don't know. I wonder if it's almost the same thing where we just need to, yeah, make people more visible, make things seem a little bit more normal, maybe not make a big deal out of it as well, to an extent. I don't know for me whether I think trying to bring new people into the scene, I think if we can get some genre crossover, that's fantastic. But I think it's more about making everyone who's in the scene just feel as comfortable as possible and as welcome as possible without I don't want to say making a big deal of it, but that's the words that come to mind. But kind of, I just want it to be as open a space as it can be.
I get what you mean. And I think that we shouldn't be scared of trying to, of making mistakes when trying to do better. I feel that nobody's in a particular point of authority to speak about things. I mean, I'm very aware that this is a podcast. Just to let you know, I am a person of color. and I am British.
Oh, that was a mistake made recently.
And you know, I'm British, although I don't sound it. And sometimes I don't feel like I'm of authority to speak about things, even though ticking a couple of boxes, because we all come with our own sort of history and personality, and we're not really defined by these boxes, right? But whatever we can do to make things more awesome, let's just do it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But also, no one's got all the answers here. And I also don't think anyone should expect anyone to have all the answers. I think ideas, great, but I don't think too much onus should be put upon people individually to try and change things. It's something we need to do together.
Absolutely. And I think like the crossover idea, you can't expect somebody to really get into punk when they're into something else. And, you know, looking at what was happening in the 70s and in the 80s with like all that crossover with the West Indian community and like, you know, the Selective Madness, whatever. It was just so cool. And seeing like how those genres like sort of crossed, you know, your Rude Boys, you know, your Oi Kids. I would love for a lot of that to happen a bit more.
That would be really cool. I mean, what changed? When did it sort of, I suppose it's just split out into loads of little subgenres, hasn't it? You know, and like our little skate punk world is quite metal influenced as well. And I think everyone's just gone in all these different directions and routes with their taste over time.
Perhaps, but I also think that with, you know, everybody's getting older in this genre, and I think the kids are genre-less. Now, I think that's the key. The kids are genreless. I was like sitting behind some kids who were like listening to grime. Then they stuck on this sick death metal band. I mean, it was all very annoying out of their phone. And then I can't remember what came next. And my mind was absolutely, blown wide open.
See, that's how I feel it should be, though, you know. Like, I mean, I know I've got quite a lot of friends who are set in one genre, but I've also got a set of friends, including myself, who'll listen to all kinds of different things, you know. Like, I'll be listening to punk in the morning and grime in the afternoon and jazz in the evening. Like, I love mixing things up. So, yeah, I think maybe it's because music's so accessible now as well, you know, with all the different streaming services. Kids can listen to loads of different stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe they're a bit more used to it than we are.
Totally. And I mean, this is why music heals and does so many amazing things. You know, I think we need to like get the kids on it, get other people on it, also be open up to what other scenes are doing and how like they're communicating and connecting with their communities. Is it Facebook? Is it Instagram? Is it WhatsApp? What are people doing? Is it flyers? And then I think when all of those things are happening and things are evolving, that gives us a space to kind of work on the difficult things of racism, sexism, and, you know, those horrible things. But, you know, we got to do the good stuff first, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think actually you summed it up really well a moment ago by saying, let's make things more awesome. It's not that they're not awesome now, you know, things aren't terrible. But I think if we can make an awesome scene more awesome, that's the way to go about it.
I'll get bumper stickers ready soon.
But I just think it's all about learning to do better as well. You know, I think that, you know, we haven't all been individually amazing for our whole lives. I think as we're learning things, we need to listen to more people's experience. We need to have more visibility. And I think that we can then, you know, once you know how to do better. That's kind of my look on it.
Absolutely. And sometimes doing and being better is hard, you know, examining things like, you know, your privilege, what you've not been doing right in the past, you know, how that might have hindered
absolutely
things, even yourself, just owning up to that and, you know.
You mentioned that you'd experienced some like racism within other scenes, like quite direct. Well, quite directly by the sounds of it. Have you ever had any experiences where you felt you were, you know, well, have you had any experiences of racism within the punk scene that you can remember? Don't feel that you have to share them, of course, but
no, like sort of within this punk scene, Not really. You've got like, I think there's a sort of balance between curiosity and what some people might be quick to dismiss as racism. I have a massive afro, and sometimes that's multicolored or whatever. And you know,
it's often purple.
Yeah, blonde, whatever. Yeah. You know, within 4 days at a festival, and people are quite lubricated, and they're just like, "Whoa, it's an awesome wig," and like sort of dive their hand right in there. I might be the first afro they've ever touched, or like, usually most of the time they're mortified because their mates has a wig on and they thought I also had one on or something.
Oh,
and
my
it's
God.
Just like, oh, isn't this embarrassing for you? But then there's that sort of balance between being that sort of, I feel connection, and also my own boundaries. And I think that's something that sort of deals that I've got to deal with. Not that I deal with it. It's just sort of understanding when that balance tips one way or the other. But I guess, you know, the only thing that I've really experienced when I started going to hardcore shows in London, you know, like Life of Agony, Sick of It All, that kind of stuff. And you just have like your odd kid sort of wearing some Edge t-shirt, and he's particularly singling you out. You might not even be in the pit. You might be on the edge of it. And he's singling you out and he's hurting you. And you're just like, whoa, what's this about?
Yeah, what the fuck's this?
You know, I've had cuts. I've had bruises. And, you know, the London beatdown crew, they're, God bless them, the LBU. One time saw this dude, like, proper having a go at me, the Kentish Town Forum. And beat the crap out of him in the pit. All through the medium of hardcore dancing, basically. Sent him on his way.
It's a weird world in which violence is okay for about 20 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
But that's really strange. From my personal experience, when I've been to shows like that, because obviously you're also a woman, the opposite end I've had with that, when I've been at hardcore shows and down the front, I've had men like literally pick me up and take me out of the pit to keep me safe. Or I've had men like where I've been trying to get in the pit and have a bit of fun. And, you know, like, I mean, I'm a bit too old for it now, but I used to know what I was doing, I swear. Or at least I was leathered, I didn't notice. But I'd quite often have guys like stand protectively in front of me with an arm out, going, like in a sort of, I will protect you, I will look after you, you can't handle this sort of way. So to hear that you're having the opposite of that is quite surprising to me. Like,
well,
I would have thought.
I've never experienced that. Do you know what I mean? And I do sometimes wonder if that is because, I guess, visually, you and I are different. So is somebody like thinking, oh, she's competent and can handle it? I think like my first Sick of It All show, I had a guy absolutely steamroller me a couple of times, and then
fucking hell,
like, you know, knocked me on my ass. I've still got like the scar on my shoulder from it. I didn't care. I was having the time of my life, right? But I knew that that dude was aggressive, and some people were like keeping their eye on him. And then he came, after he steamrolled me three times, came up to me and went, well done. Like,
oh,
what the
off.
Heck does that mean?
Oh, yeah, you can handle your own.
So glad that the chats that I'm having with people, that nobody's kind of experiencing that. You know, I don't feel like, I mean, it was crap, but I'm just going to get on with my life, and I'm not going to let anybody push me out. Even like when neo-Nazis show up to a show and everybody...
Christ.
That's happened a couple of times.
That's a thing.
Interesting in London, but you know. But I haven't seen that for such a long time. And I'm really glad to hear reports from everybody that that's not what they've experienced. You know, there might be some of that happening somewhere, but...
I don't know. I've not heard too much of it. That doesn't mean it's not happening, of course.
But it could be just everybody's in their bubbles.
Yeah.
A bit more now.
You know, and I do think that with punk, it is a bit of a safe bubble in itself, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Like, everyone's welcome, but there's not that many wankers.
You know, and I think the flip side of that is that kid at the Kentish Town Forum, they got his butt handed to him. I mean, he showed up to a gig where, I mean, I don't understand how he thought, like, it was, I think Rilla Biscuits or somebody played. I really can't remember. And that was like his band. But he must have felt so out of place with like this multicultural audience around him. They were selling Pussy Riot t-shirts there. You know, it was like they had a fundraiser. And so how out of place that poor kid must have felt that he had to go pick on somebody. So yeah. I hope he has found a loving place now. Hopefully not in amongst neo-Nazis or something, but a more lovely...
See, that worries me. I wonder whether the kind of people like that maybe learn from what they've done and grow, or whether it goes the opposite way and it becomes more insular and they change the music they're listening to. I mean, I suppose there must still be some little bubbles outside of our bubble that exist, because there were that whole rash of really horribly racist skinhead bands in like the late 80s, right? I'm thinking like Screwdrivery type thing. They must still have fans dotted about, like hiding.
Yeah, who
don't turn up to our kind of shows.
They do.
Yeah, I wonder where they all go.
Well, I met the guitarist from Screwdriver.
Have you?
Yeah.
Was it fine?
He's the guy with the massive, what do you call it, the eagle of like the Third Reich.
Mm.
He's in like a swastika in the middle of it, like tattooed on his neck.
Whoa.
I mean, like, you're struggling even to hide that with a scarf, Sonny.
Whoa.
And, so, like, he shows up at this show that we're kind of playing, this band I manage is playing.
Shit.
Yeah. Totally reformed and kind of constantly looking at me, because he's literally just gotten out of prison that day to kind of apologize.
What?
He got out of prison that day.
Oh, my God.
To apologize to the owner of the venue. Because why he got locked up is because he went totally tit, smashed up the place, apparently. This is allegedly, this is what I heard, smashed up the place.
Fuck.
Locked them out and got nicked for it, basically. And he came there to apologize. And like, I'm like, don't come to me to apologize for your past sins, boy. That's just the kind
shit.
Of constantly.
Yeah, I'm not
going
to know what to say to that. Oh, fucking hell. I can't even imagine how that feels, though, you know, seeing someone with that kind of tattoo. And they're not even, you know, they're not going to come and say anything to you, but they're literally sporting it on their body. Like, I can't fathom how uncomfortable that situation must be. Like,
yeah, I feel bad for them in a way. Like, dude,
well, yeah.
Could you imagine just feeling so aggro every day? I mean, I love a bit of hardcore and metal, right?
I love
beating the crap out of stuff. It's great fun. But could you like just walking around and going, "Urgh." Like, that's tiring. I feel sorry.
Actually,
I think I've
probably had some days. I've had some days. Like the Limp Bizkit days, you know, feeling like a freight train, that kind of thing. Oh, shit. I used to wake up furious every morning at one point when I lived in London, and just I'd wander around with a scowl on my face. I had some friends who were guys who said that I was really intimidating. I was about 19 at this point. I think I've mellowed.
This is why I don't make any friends in the gym, because like my resting bitch face when listening to hardcore is massively severe.
That's so important.
But yeah, like, I mean, you know, maybe it's like a sort of defense thing. I'm not bothered about what other people think of me. It's more about what I think of me. I'm more looking for the exit points in situations like that. And it's clearly looking at me like he wanted to chat to me to like sort of say something nice, just constant eyes. And like people were talking to them, and I heard from them offhand that, you know, he's reformed, and they're like, why are you telling me this? Is it like, what, are you trying to intro this conversation? But I just
yeah,
feel sad
or for maybe trying
like
to
that.
Make you feel comfortable. I don't know.
Yeah,
like, it's hey, like, look, what? It's fine.
You know, and then also I do feel like a bit of compassion for somebody who's done the hard work to say that like they're reformed. I mean, like, why not like get that blacked
That's
out
true.
First of all? Unless you
or maybe
want
a nice scarf.
Yeah, or a nice scarf.
Shall we play another track? You were talking to me earlier about Prey Drive.
Yeah, sick band, really cool. I love...
Are they from Norwich?
I believe they are, yes.
That's my
neck
of
the
woods.
Woods. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, I've heard good things about them, but I've not heard anything they've done yet. So I'm quite excited to hear some new stuff.
Yeah, this is their last single, their last album.
Cool.
Really cool. They've got great videos and
cool.
I'm liking this track. It's a lot of the things that you see in like melodic hardcore and punk and all mixed together. A bit of metal I feel in there as well. It's very modern.
Is it Shinjuku we're going for?
Shinjuku, yeah.
Excellent. Well, this is Prey Drive with Shinjuku. That was Shinjuku by Prey Drive. Excellent times. What have you been up to on the Lockjaw front recently, Leslie?
Well, we've just released a pre-order for the Burnt Tapes.
On a tree?
On a tree, on a beech tree.
I couldn't believe this when I saw it. You're releasing a record on a tree. I mean, obviously not literally on the... It's not like a QR code on, like etched into
you
the
get
tree,
a
is
Q-
it?
You get a QR code on the box. Cool. It's you get a little keepsake, which is nice and memorable. And I think most importantly, you get a plant of tree, because the one thing that we're fed up of doing is, oh, I love CDs. I've got a CD player
so
in my car,
plastic.
Nothing else works. I love a car disc CD. But we just don't want to really manufacture any.
No.
If it's not necessary.
No.
We wanted people to be excited about these tracks because they're really good.
Honestly, what a big Burnt Tapes fan I am, but Get It Got It Good is, I think, one of the best songs they've ever done. And that's big thing coming from me because I love their early stuff.
It is such an earworm. Seriously. It's like, I just find myself, I don't know, folding my laundry.
It's really good.
It's in my head.
Yeah. I think the tree idea is such a good one though. Like, I mean, obviously you've done like coffee and hot sauce and stuff before. But this is a great idea. Yes, release it on a tree. So the tree itself, do you get like, is it like a little sapling or is it, you know, what is it? What do you actually get in the post?
So you will get a box or a container, a tube, and that will contain a little sapling, which we recommend that you plant fairly soon. Because it is a live plant. Yeah.
Yes.
There might be a couple of other surprises in there. Let's see. I mean, you're going to get like your lockjaw stickers and all those goodies. As always, there will be instructions on the box, cool, just in case you need them.
I quite fancied getting it, but I'm not sure if I can fit a tree in my flat. I've already got a lot of plants and two trees, but I think maybe I could fit another tree in. I don't know.
Well, you can pot it.
Good.
You can go bonsai style.
Does it grow smaller?
You know, I believe you can trim it. It's not going to grow into a massive tree very quickly. So I think you're rather safe to like kind of keep it potted. It's not going to grow tremendously over the course of a couple of years. Perhaps when it gets a bit bigger, you can find a nicer place to sort of put it, or a safer place, not next to a building or, you know, your home.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's just the one thing that people be mindful of is like actually where you're planting it. I mean, who knows? There might be a couple of gorilla plants out there, you know, gorilla planting, which would be pretty
gorilla burnt tapes trees.
Yeah,
I think it's great. I love that idea. It's one of the most unique releases I've seen this year, like at least this year. It's fantastic.
I think it's rad. And instead of like making a bunch of CDs, which are great, but everybody's going to plant a forest instead.
Yeah, and I think like I know that CDs, I mean, I still buy occasional CDs, but I don't really think people want CDs anymore, you know, but it's so expensive to do vinyl.
Yeah. But I, you know, I still need something in my listen to in my car, so same. I do enjoy getting the old car disc in there. Yeah, it's a difficult one because I think people in different countries like different formats as well.
True.
So yep, you've got to cater for everybody, and I don't think too many people can argue with a tree.
Oh, I love it! What else have you guys had this year? So you released, so what you've got like Sunliner, Human Project.
Yes, Sunliner.
High Time?
So Sunliner are also doing another batch of beer, by the way.
I was going to say, they did beer, didn't they? So you're doing beer and trees now.
Yeah, so I got to shake it up, you know.
Well, yeah, so they got the Brass Castle Brewery to make them like an IPA to go with the latest release, didn't
they? To go with the release. So it was a flexi disc, a couple of songs on there, namely Structure. That's a great cracking tune. And it came with a beer and a t-shirt. The flexi looks absolutely gorgeous. And if you like were one of the handful of people like sort of pre-order initially, the guys got busy and wrote like notes and put lots of keepsakes in there.
Oh,
so it's
nice.
It's really sweet.
So what have you got anything coming up at Lockjaw that you can tell us about, or is everything under wraps, top secret at the moment?
Do you know what? I'm going to say top secret at the moment.
Oh, okay. I see your game. I see what you're doing.
I would say if you want to know what's happening, sign up to the newsletter.
Oh, yes.
Go to lockjawrecords.co.uk, we've got a newsletter, and sometimes we sneak some hints or let things out there first.
Very good.
And, you know, it's fun as well. Like in the newsletters, we're trying to bring attention to causes that need to be heard about. You know, we were just talking about Black Lives Matter. We're just trying to be a bit more active and promote sort of social activism amongst our crew.
That High Time EP that you guys did earlier in the year was mint.
Cracking. I'm so upset that we were having to wait a bit longer to see when they can come over.
I know.
So I'm really looking forward to those gigs. That's going to be excellent.
Sometime in the future when we're allowed to leave the house. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing gigs and I'm looking forward to seeing everyone. I feel really disconnected from like the London crew and, you know, like the Belgian and German and Slovenian crews and all that. But I think it's just going to come back like we just hit the pause button and things will pop up where they left off. And I hope it's giving bands a bit more time to, you know, chill out and think about what we're doing, record some music.
I I think there's some great things happening that are rumbling and everybody, all those group chats and stuff. Lots of people are getting some exciting stuff together. So yeah, like in terms of Lockjaw stuff, another your favorite band, just keep your eyes peeled. I think as people navigate, you know, these new waters, some interesting things
fresh ideas will
come out.
I think you are absolutely right. Well, I tell you what, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Leslie. It's so nice to catch up, even if it is over Zoom.
It's been really cool, seriously.
Yeah, this has been nice.
Good to see you.
I also think, though, we can't let the podcast pass without playing a track from your band.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah?
I've got a track for you. It's not what you're expecting. It's called Dutty Love. It's a cover of Dirty Love. And our bassist was just having a tinker around with it. And, I guess it's very summery. You'll see.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, yeah, again, thank you for joining me, Leslie. I miss you and everybody else, and I'll see you down the front.
Miss you too. Thanks for having me.
Dutty Love, Midwich Cuckoo's cover of Dirty Love. I really enjoyed that and I love talking to Leslie. It was so great to catch up with her. One of the things that the pandemic has taught me is that having a podcast is kind of an excuse to catch up with your mates, even if it is a little bit weird having a chat over Zoom. I think everyone's used to Zoom now, but I maintain that I absolutely hate video calls unless they're for an actual business purpose. As I'm releasing this, we're kind of just starting into the second UK lockdown and I feel like I'm missing everyone quite a bit. I'm really starting to miss live shows now because we've got absolutely no idea when they're going to start up again. But it's all going to be okay. What I'm working on at the moment is our second issue of Paper Cuts. If you missed the last one, last year I set out with the intention of making like a, you know, 30 page sort of DIY zine type thing. And being me, it ended up being a paperback book that we got properly printed and bound. And we sold out of like 225 copies in the space of 2 weeks. I wasn't expecting that kind of response. And I was a bit overwhelmed, to be honest. Like, thank you to everyone who got a copy. We had over 30 authors contribute to that one. And since it went so well, I thought, well, you know what? Fuck it, I'll do it again. and also, I'm bored this year, so it's kind of the perfect time to be trying it out. So at the moment, I'm working on Paper Cuts 2, which is an anthology of stories, anecdotes. It's a bit of fiction. It's a bit of non-fiction. There's artwork and photography. I've had contributions from over 40 people from in the punk rock scene so far, all from different countries, from different backgrounds and bands. It's really heartening to read everyone's submissions. And I'm honestly so proud of everyone who's kind of contributed to it. At the moment, I'm working on editing that and putting it together, but it will be available to pre-order before Christmas in the hope that I can get it out the doors and into your letterboxes by, well, you know, just before Christmas. Hopefully that you can, so you can give it as gifts and things like that, if you like. I don't know, people sell stuff before Christmas, right? So obviously I should fit in with that corporate template. Who knows? Anywho, I'm working on that. Keep an eye out for it. And again, thanks to everyone who supported the last issue and thanks to everyone who's going to support this one. I think right now we need something to celebrate, something that's positive. And hopefully Paper Cuts can be that in the absence of actual gigs this year. But yeah, thank you so much for listening today. I hope that you enjoyed my chat with Leslie. You can check out all of her stuff over at lockjawrecords.co.uk and also be sure to check out Midwich Cuckoos on all the socials and on Spotify. They've got some great tunes. We've certainly played a few before. But yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks to Leslie for chatting to me. I miss you all and I'll see you down the front.